Testing.
Missed. I'd like to know what those are for our audience, since you certainly support
her. I think she's focused and dedicated herself on transportation issues. She's been on the Transportation Commission. And
an example would be?
Well, I'm not familiar with that because I'm not focused on transportation issues.
We still like you, Gordon. I feel that she has to be very specific about issues in order to get the votes of people who want to see real change in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
That's my feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you want to say about anything else happening? The canopy quality, the color scheme of the house? Thank you.
All right.
With candidate Ed Porter. What, you invited him to come to the homeless working group?
I did.
What did he say?
He said he... I don't know what he said about that.
Bernard Klitzner invited Ed Porter to come to the homeless working group. And by the way, Ed did eventually come to the homeless working group and did give an hour and a half, 2 hours to the group. Again, his answers were not of sufficient, in my mind, quality and clarity and committedness as far as basically ending the sleeping ban until and unless safe sleeping zones are set up. That I myself am not assured that he's going to do that at all, but he did come, and that was the point of the question Bernard Klitzner was asking him, trying to get it to pin him down on that issue. I then attempted to do so and went up to him, and we had this rather acrimonious and amusing conversation, and in a way very revealing. I'm going to play it now, and we'll continue listening to this. It all happened at Emily Riley's kickoff party up on Escalona.
He never really answered the question, but he knows it. He knows the time and the place.
Yes.
Oh, you're gonna turn it off now?
No, just turned. Actually, just sort of manipulating my tape recorder. Is this what he's going to be doing at city council?
And what happened here was Ed Porter tried to grab my tape recorder out of my hand and turn it off.
That's really the question I have. Ed, are you walking away from the question about what you're going to do on homeless issues? That's all we want to know, but you want to have your answer to.
Read my literature.
Read your literature. So you don't want to say anything.
Robert, I'm going to ask you not to use this tape.
Well, you can ask me that all you want.
Will you not use my tape?
Why? Get your hand away from my tape, Ed. It's none of your business to do that. You know that. This is a public
you're
place.
You're a sneaky person.
You're in a public
you're
place.
You're a sneaky
Ed.
Person who goes around taping people.
It's not
and
sneaky.
You don't tell people what you're going to do.
It is out in public.
Nor do you ask their permission.
Great radio Santa Cruz.
You're a manipulative person,
no,
Robert.
This is open, and you know exactly what's going on. You're afraid to answer issues, Ed. That's your problem. You're walking away from the issues.
You don't deserve all.
How about the listening public? Do they deserve it? So we have Ed Porter walking.
And I guess 3,000 homeless people in Santa Cruz don't deserve an answer either.
So 3,000 homeless people don't deserve an answer in Santa Cruz. Right. Well, hey, that's interesting. So as the party winds down, we've seen Ed Porter claiming he's being manipulated, but we give him a chance to make an open statement. He refuses to do so. Instead, he tries to grab the tape recorder, accuses me of surreptitious behavior with an open tape recorder. Look at this guy. He's nodding, but he won't talk. Yeah, see, we got...
You're the only one here with a tape recorder.
Hey, you don't have to say anything. You choose not to. Every other candidate has said something.
And that other voice is Ed Porter. He came back a number of times to make comments. And actually, at the end of the evening, we had a relatively civil exchange in which I again invited him to come to the homeless working group. Because even though I don't believe his position is adequate on the sleeping ban or on police review or on firing the staff, nonetheless, of all the candidates, except for Steve Argue, he's actually been at city council meetings, spoken up or emailed in on behalf of the rights of the dolphin tenants. Spoken up on issue. He's spoken up on safe sleeping zones in the past. He's actually done something. And, of course, the problem is, like Emily Riley, one sees him waffling off to the right as the election gets nearer. And the reality, I'm afraid, is that regardless of how good a person's positions are, unless you bind them with chains of steel to commitments, they get entrapped by the staff, by the conservative forces that essentially take over once they are in power, if they get into power. Continuing more with this exchange with Ed Porter.
Why are you afraid to speak, Ed? I don't understand.
Someday, Robert, you will learn to be a constructive person and work with
people. You're attacking me personally instead of dealing with the issues, Ed. That's the standard approach of pseudo-progressives and Sanders. You won't deal with the issues in a public way. That's the problem. Am I mistaken? Let me ask an unbiased individual, Steve, are you? Steve, what do you think? Has Ed here been dealing with the issues?
I'm not unbiased. The most biased person you could ask. I'm more biased than you are.
Yes.
But no, that was nuts. I mean, you gave a candidate a forum to speak his mind on an issue, and he went ballistic. I mean, you know.
Right. Well, I'm afraid that, you know, I don't know. It's ironic because here we have Fred Geiger, who works with Ed Porter, and I'm sure Fred. You saw what happened with Ed a moment ago.
I don't know, Robert, but I got to go.
Of course, Ed. And his campaign manager is moving out the door as well. I'm sorry, his information operator? Right. If we see over in the corner, we've got Ed kind of clustering with Marty Wormhout, protective cover over there.
Yeah.
And Catherine Byers. It's a reasonable group. To tell Ed it's safe to come out. We're not going to hurt him. Okay. Hey, I'm going to take off as well. So I'm out here on the porch here, and I am recording as two innocent individuals are about to be victimized by the malicious Norris here.
And now we're giving a quick call to Ed Porter backer Fred Geiger, who hopefully will be available to talk about some upcoming issues at City Council. Hey,
Fred Geiger.
Hi, please leave a message after
oh
the
dear. Two Fred Geigers.
After the election, got a high-speed printer on.
Who is the real Fred Geiger? I think that's the question here.
Thanks for calling.
Hey there, hello. Uh-oh.
Okay.
Are you recording the entire Free Radio?
Now you're on record, Robert.
Uh-oh.
You have to watch what you say.
Is the entire Free Radio Santa Cruz audience on record here? You're on the air, Fred Geiger. So watch what you say. America is listening.
Totally stoked here, Robert.
I don't know if you've been listening to our show. Probably not.
No, I've been out cleaning my deck. Actually, I have a meeting coming up soon.
Oh, okay. Anything you want to invite the citizenry to?
I think I've got pretty much a capacity garage at the moment.
Will Mayor Sugar be coming to this meeting?
I don't believe he will, actually.
Oh, dear. Well, let's talk a bit about City Council. You actually were quite successful in getting the City Council to pull off its agenda this Title IV abortion that was coming up, that was essentially a kind of a more building inspectors, less rights for, I would say, both tenants and landlords, and a difficult situation where the the accessory dwelling units would not be amnestied, and we would be in a situation where people would have to worry about having less housing than before. But there's a planning commission meeting coming up at that was taken off the agenda thanks to your good work and that of many of the rest of us.
Due to another other number of people, including yourself, Robert, that met and studied the issue and brought it to people's attention and needed to know about it.
Ah, well, do you think that this kind of sneaky, it seemed a little sneaky to me because I think you found that the planning commission voted some things that the staff just did not put onto the recommendations to City Council in a meaningful and clear way?
Yeah, well, I can't say exactly what the City Council got because, as you probably know and many people know, the staff report that the public gets is very abbreviated compared to the staff report that the council gets.
Mm-hmm.
So you're never sure until you start hearing the debate how much information they may or may not have.
Or lack of debate. We saw this thing passed a first reading with two shakes of a little lamb's tail, 7-0.
There was enough information being conveyed in the staff report to me, and that's why I got involved, because I know that the Planning Commission had several hours of hearings and spent some time and some energy on trying to make this a good ordinance.
And this was an ordinance, in fact, that would allow building inspectors increased powers to inspect and to get their own warrants from in-house administrative judges appointed by the planning department, funded by the planning department, collecting money for the planning department.
Sounds pretty good.
Is that accurate, of the planning department, by the planning department?
As far as I can tell, it's a 40-page, I believe, ordinance. I'm not an attorney, so All I can do is try to interpret it as best as I can.
Did you talk to Mark Premack about this? I know he's been involved in I know you and Mark are old buddies. Actually, we've talked to him several times around issues of homelessness and gotten bad answers every time, but he is very articulate and interesting person to talk to.
I will say one thing about Mark Premack that I can't say about some other people running for council, especially a former council person, is at least Mark Premack, if he doesn't know that he has the answer you want, is honest enough to just say so.
Now, wait a minute. I suspect you may be doing a slur against the man Bruce Bratton calls Scott Kennedy.
Wow, is there such a person would do such a thing?
Well, I don't know. You know, Kennedy went out of his way, one of the first candidate forums, the one that was televised on the air, to denounce you by name. Are you guys going to do kind of a showdown? Is there going to be a benefit for the homeless, for the two you're going to mud wrestle or something? I mean, what's happening?
I'd be willing to wrestle, but I would like to stay out of the mud because I think that might be his element.
Ah, I see. So you're going to have one hand behind your back, but you don't want to. He's a half-wit already. I don't want to say that. That's inappropriate.
I just like to discuss things on the issues, on the facts, on an honest level, and not try to have anybody deceived by misrepresentation.
This is the election season, Fred, and it's also a season when it looks like City Council is going to be ramming through the Dolphin property acquisition in spite of SCAN Housing and Homelessness Committee and the SCAN General Membership's concern that this not be done until guarantees are in place so that current tenants won't be bounced by our pals in Mercy Charities Housing that Catherine Byers insists this whole program be turned over to. Is this the standard thing? Is there a big rush to pass a bunch of bullshit legislation before the election? Did this happen last 1988?
Unfortunate if there was, because it would be sort of an anti-democratic move if people felt like what they were supporting wouldn't be supported by the incoming council as directly.
Well, surely Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar would never allow, or at least would speak out against such a thing.
Well, I'm hoping that they'll put several things onto the agenda after the new council is seated, which is only a short period of time away, less than 2 months, and that, like I said, if people are electing representatives and in the very near future, it would seem that some of the major issues should be decided by those representatives rather than the ones that haven't been voted in for 4 years and maybe out of touch with the people.
Now, I've been trying to find ways to hold candidates accountable. You're working closely with the campaigns of Ed Porter and, I guess, Scott Bugenthal, at least those two individuals?
I'm working closely with Ed, and I'm also working with Dick DeBrava and Scott Bugenthal to some extent, trying to help them out as much as I can while I'm pretty busy with Ed's campaign.
What about Emily? Don't you like her hairstyle? I mean, come on.
Yeah, she's cool. Yeah. I mean, I'm doing less for her just because I think she doesn't need my support as much because she's got a pretty broad base of support and trying to get
sort of a schmaltz shoe in, so to speak.
As many candidates that'll be hopefully progressive as possible on the council.
Well, let's talk turkey here. You know, I mean, how can we be sure that these clowns don't, as they say, do a sugar on us? That is to say, get into office, and one minute they're talking about reforming the police, and the next minute they don't want to take anything out of the police budget. Well, let's say very little. And then there's no reform of the police. There's no public report for against the the $10,000. What did the police do back in May of 1999?
Well,
we hired somebody to find out. We can't find that out because the city council's keeping that stamped confidential. These young Turks we voted in are young turkeys. So I'm just wondering.
Well, that's why election season is Thanksgiving, Robert.
Good point. Well, how can we make sure that the gobblers don't gobble us up, there, Fred?
First of all, I'm not going to let you characterize Keith in a way that people might think I'm characterizing him also. So I'm just saying that you
take exception to my nasty rhetoric.
Opinion. I think we need a new police review law that actually does something, and I think this current law was crafted by a number of pseudo-progressives.
Scott Kennedy,
as you mentioned, to tell the public, okay, look, we're progressive, we did a police review law. When you get into it, it's like, this police review law doesn't allow anybody to do anything unless the police chief okays it and releases the information, which is a real joke, you know. So I think that I'm sure that Keith and Christopher and I imagine Tim and some newly elected council members will be willing to support a real police review law, which isn't a novel concept. It exists all over the country. So it's not like we're breaking any kind of ground, even though we constantly like to believe that we're extremely progressive.
Well, isn't it strange, Fred, that if they had this great enthusiasm for this new police law, that either one of the three would have spoken out publicly in some clear, coherent, and meaningful way, and yet for some strange reason, for 2 years, Not a one of them has said a word in any clear public context. Could it be that are they tongue-tied? Have they lost their verbal skills? What's the problem with
it's
these three?
It's a combination of things, Robert.
I see.
One thing is the way our city government has been run is like the council is sort of on a reactive basis to what the staff is doing. So they're always trying to put out fires and play catch-up and you know, stop the staff from doing things that they don't really want done. And they're overwhelmed, and I think it's because of a lack of adequate pay. I mean, $1,000 a month, you know, is that supposed to be enough to keep up with the reams of paper they get every week? And also, no personal assistance, no staff that they can directly relate to as having similar political goals and, like, give them a projects and have them do the research, and so therefore they're just relegated to this role of stomping out fires.
That brings to mind what I proposed to Ed Porter right after the NAACP forum. And I suggested to him, you know, that he commit himself to getting his own volunteer staff people before the election who would both educate him on issues that, you know, so he wouldn't have to rely on Seal Cirillo and Jim Lang and all those folks of yore, and also would serve as a conduit for the public. And you, of course, told me when I talked to you earlier you thought this was a good idea, but lots of good ideas get bounced around, but so far Ed has not committed himself to that, nor has any other council candidate, I might add, as far as I know. But what do we have to do? Do we have to kind of sit him down and force feed him with a funnel? What are we going to have to do to get some kind of?
I think that Ed has probably been one of the people who has been supporting the idea publicly, you know, from the beginning and the longest, ever since the idea came up after the last election. So, you know, I would certainly hope that would be something that would be.
If he were supporting it publicly, why isn't he talking about it and doing it and committing himself to it?
Right now, he's out there walking precincts, and yesterday he was walking precincts, and he's going to be walking.
He can't think and walk at the same time. Sounds like President Ford or something.
I don't know. It's easy for you to say, Robert, but the fact is the guy's working his ass off trying to get elected, and he's got a billion seminars. And I mean, you wouldn't believe it. There must have been like 20 political groups submitting like 6-page questionnaires that want detailed answers on every little thing. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the guy's totally overloaded at this point. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be able to spend a lot of time.
You know, it seems like I heard the same thing about our three new council candidates after they were in office. And I still keep hearing that. In fact, I heard you say that about poor Mayor Sugar this morning when I talked to you. The guy is overloaded.
Totally.
You know, I mean, you can talk about the poor burro, I guess, being overloaded, but the reality is these aren't burros. These are people on the city council. And I guess I also, this kind of plays into what's coming up, because we're going to have an African-American calling in soon, or calling her soon, about the racial profiling issue. As you know, Santa Cruz police are accused of stopping black people and harassing them at a much higher rate than their percentage in the population. I think it's true for Latinos, too. And we attempted to get this issue before the CPRB, that's the new CPRB, and Arnie Leff and his gang of cover-up artists had, you know, essentially sent it back to the police. She said, "We trust Chief Belcher." I asked Ed Porter if he'd come out in favor of replacing the city manager and the police chief. "Oh, no, we can't talk about that before the elections because I'd never get elected." Now, is it a democratic process where you say what you're going to do before you're elected and then get and run on those issues? Or am I mistaken? Am I a little bit confused about that process?
As you know, Robert, Ed has like a very extensive, detailed list of issues and comments on them. And I think those are out there and available for people to study. That doesn't happen to be an issue that he's studied a lot at this time. I do know that he would certainly support a accountable police force, whatever it takes to get that.
I was talking, of course, about the firing of the city manager and the police chief, or at least a competitive replacement process.
The lack of citizen control and possible racial profiling.
Well, I'm talking about real racial profiling that goes on, and the failure of the current city council, or of Ed Porter, mind you, to stand up and say at any time in the last 2 years, let's end racial profiling immediately. Let's have the city council, Keith Sugar, Tim Fitzmaurice, whoever you want, introduce a resolution. If the rest of the reactionaries want to vote it down, then they will vote it down, but it will be a public issue.
Well, a resolution is one thing, but a meaningful police review.
Well, a resolution that requires the police chief to keep statistics is meaningful. I'm sorry. The police chief's latest answer before the CPRB, 7 months after, actually 9 months after Arnie Leff said, "We're going to trust our police chief," is, "I don't have the software." You know, maybe someone should go down to Costco's and get him some software. What do you think?
A little weak, all right. Yeah, I mean, they got a $12 million building, but they can't afford a computer program that costs like $50 to $200.
Has Ed publicly complained about these cost overruns at the police department?
Well, I know he's very concerned about especially the responsible contractor aspect, which causes these cost overruns where the city goes and hires whatever lowball artists they can find, and then the price ends up going double because of the aversion on the city management part to union contractors that are experienced and competent and can prove that in writing. That's something I think that is, I know, is definitely in Ed's campaign position statement as far as responsible contractor ordinance needs to be tightened up as allowed by current state law, enforced, which I think the staff has no stomach for whatsoever because of their animosity to possibly getting union contractors in there. And once again, the last four major city construction projects are still in court with millions of dollars of overruns, and this is something that I think anybody in the city of Santa Cruz could support as a more efficient use of the taxpayers' money and less waste.
Had the other candidates you support also specifically come out on these issues, or only Ed Porter?
I know Dick DeBrava is aware of it, and I know Scott Bugenthal is aware of it. I would certainly, you know, and this, I'm going to go back to something that you were sort of, if you want to use the word, harping on, because I didn't want to take you off the subject.
No, thank
and that
you.
Is, you know, when the new council gets elected, and I expect that we'll have at least two progressive gains, hopefully three or even four. Yeah, I think that the time for excuses on a lot of issues is going to be over as far as I'm concerned, because, you know, when you have a solid majority, it's time to move and do some things. And I really believe, you know, and I don't know if you agree with me, but I really believe that several of the progressives on the current council will join with several of the new ones and do some things like this responsible contractor ordinance and real police oversight by the civilians and, you know, a definite auditing of departments' performances, as was suggested by Keith Sugar at the recent council meeting, to find out if we're getting our money's worth and find out if we're getting productivity and find out what can be done to enhance the effectiveness of the taxpayers' dollars as spent by the city staff.
Mm-hmm. The Title IV concern we began with, which is this building inspector's boondoggle.
My God, how did we get so lost, Robert?
I don't know.
Like all kinds of stuff, like hitting
a tenuous path through the wood, you know. What can you do? Do we know when this sucker is coming back? Is it going to appear at the Planning Commission this summer?
We don't know. I don't think it's on the Planning Commission agenda. You mentioned...
I don't want to see it back there, and you don't want to see it back there, but we have no information. I mean, does Chris... I know you were going to try to contact Councilmember Chris Crone at some point, maybe to get some information on this?
Yeah, I mean, what you said is accurate, but also not fully accurate as far as we don't want to see it back there. I wouldn't mind seeing it back there if I was convinced that the council members had studied it and read it adequately. I know that they hadn't before. It was obvious by some of the comments that they didn't really understand what it was about, and I would like to see it not come back until I'm pretty sure that they have, and actually perhaps until there's a new council that doesn't already have their minds made up.
We're talking about an ordinance that would create two new building inspector positions with extensive powers that they don't have, including go to judges who aren't real judges to get administrative search warrants very quickly, and whose standards of set, I guess the city manager would set the fine schedule and define the parameters. It was all very much in-house stuff, which seems to give building inspectors the power to condemn so-called hobo units or units that aren't as, you know, palatial as others on the west side, as well as beach flat units, I guess, down in the beach area, which, you know, might be good, but certainly would be bad if there wasn't provision for accessory dwelling units. And we don't know, I'm just wondering, should people be keeping alert as to whether this is likely to come back in a premature and bad form before the election, as it already was? It's passed a first reading, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me really quickly sum up just for people that may be listening that haven't gotten fully up to speed on this, because it is a little complex. I mean, of course, everyone on the council and virtually everyone in the city is for people that are renting, having safe and adequate and sanitary rental facilities. That's not the question here, although that's the simplistic level on which the council has only reacted.
Rent control would be nice. Yeah.
So basically what we're talking about here is two main problems. One is if there are more inspectors hired, the tendency might be for them to have to go out and raise revenue to pay their own salaries, and the easiest target would be these garage conversions or accessory dwelling units. We have over 2,500 of those by the city's own estimate, figure 1.5 people each. You got almost 4,000 people.
That's a 1986 estimate, right?
Right, so we know it's way up there. So like I say, 4,000 people living in these units. These are people who are paying low rents in affordable housing that has no taxpayer involvement whatsoever. Unfortunately, these people are in a legal limbo where if they do have an unsafe condition, they can't complain to the city, because if they do, the city will say, oh, this is too close to the property line, this can't be inhabited, or this is built in the covered parking for the main unit, this can't be inhabited, you're out of here, and you've lost your housing, and now you're joining one of the hundreds or thousands of homeless people in Santa Cruz because you can't afford to pay the current rents. You've been paying anywhere from $400 to $700 most likely, and so they have to just keep quiet and suffer the consequences. So that's one of the two problems with this proposed ordinance. It doesn't allow for the grandfathering, the legalization of these ordinances, of these units, so they can be inspected without having the people losing their housing. The second problem is the civil rights implications of having the city manager decide what the powers of these people shall be and having these code enforcement enhanced, or I think they're called code enforcement officers. They're deciding the penalties themselves of cases that are brought before them, as well as the compliance periods, and as well as the guilt or innocence of the people. So it's a little bit too much power in one branch. It has all three branches of the judiciary contained in one branch of the city planning department, which is really
suggesting a police state here.
Yeah, vague and unconstitutional is what the court would call some of these statutes. So no one's against the goals of these statutes. We just don't want to see...
I mean, are you part of the Landlord Liberation Front that Tim Fitzmaurice talks about?
LLF, yeah. I'm out to exploit everyone I can and subject them to horrible conditions, and I want to maintain that position, yeah. So basically, it's a civil rights issue. Doesn't matter who it is, you know, whether it's people own property or they don't own property. I mean, this is an unconstitutional thing because it's big. And also the effect on this law of thousands of people living in garage units that should be able to be inspected and declared legal so they can have full protection of the laws.
Well, I know you successfully got the Housing and Homelessness Subcommittee of SCAN to come out in favor of holding off on this one, or at least looking at it a second or third time.
Got the council to do that, to write a letter to the council to do that, yeah.
Yeah, and also the council took it off the agenda rather than putting it at the very end of the agenda so it could be examined at 2 in the morning, as they'd done with the Safe Sleeping Zones deal, the end of the Safe Sleeping Zones. But does this mean if it comes back on the agenda in altered form, we'll have at least two more readings before it becomes law? I think that is what the actual process, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that the council people will take the time and energy to thoroughly look at this.
And there'll be at least some changes, we would think.
And I would hope that they will send it back. And this is what the Planning Commission did after they had several hours of public hearings, is they wanted it sent back to have the grandfathering of the ADUs incorporated into this statute, and also some of this overly broad and vague language that could lead to civil rights abuses tightened up. And that's all I think anybody...
Well, I guess people should call the Planning Commission before the 72-hour Brown Act period kicks in, where they can't change the agenda. It's Thursday at 7:30 is the Planning Commission, so if you call before Monday at 7:30 and talk to a Planning Commissioner, presumably you could get this on the Planning Commission agenda for perhaps amendment, discussion, that sort of thing. And I know you, Fred, will probably be doing just that.
Well, I think that I would like to do even more than that. I think I would like to talk to a couple of planning commissioners and ask them to make sure that it's put on the agenda. I'm not even sure on that commission who controls the agenda. I think that's a gray area that needs to be resolved in the city staff commission structure. I know sometimes in the planning commission, the commissioners themselves don't believe that they control the agenda or the staff. I'm on the transportation commission. I believe that we should and do control the staff and the agenda, and I think we take steps to do just that.
We've been talking to Fred Geiger, activist and city council candidate backer, with a lot more optimism than I have. Fred, anything coming up in the next week we should be aware of? You want to tell people any quick announcements?
Well, I don't know, Robert. You brought up the Dolphin Lee, and I have no idea what's happening on that.
There is a meeting tomorrow of Residentes Unidos, a group concerned who are Dolphin Lee tenants, tomorrow at 124 Lee Brandt, 7 o'clock at the Lee apartments, not the trailer, at the garage.
Monday evening.
That's tomorrow night, at Monday evening. I invite people to come on down, and I guess the city council meets at 1 o'clock to dump the Dolphin into the hands of Mercy Charities Housing. If people want to check that out, that's at 1 o'clock. You're not going to be allowed to speak to the council members at the closed session, but they will hear you in the interval before it happens if you're interested.
I think this is another issue that would serve the community quite well if it was held off until the new council takes its seats, because some of them have made public statements. They have opinions and views on this issue, and I think that passing something within a month or so of when a new council is to take office, especially something public and controversial like this, would be really a disservice to the community.
Pretty cheesy. It almost reminds one of the Bisal rush to bulldoze in the Kennedy-Rotkin era.
You could look at it from that light.
Yeah.
I think people mean well on the council, but I think they need to realize that let the democratic process take its course.
Are you saying mean well, that mean is well on the city council? Is that what you're saying?
No, I didn't see their mean,
no,
but I said
I'm sorry.
Their intentions were good.
Of course.
Yeah.
I thank you, Fred Geiger, for joining us on this this grilling session. Anything you want to add before we leave you in the dust?
Well, I think I'm pretty exhausted by now, Robert. Thanks a lot for the airtime.
You're welcome, Fred.
Catch you later.
Hey, good to hear you. Bye-bye.
And it's our musicless show today on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse. This is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. My broadsides are coming out to yours, and hopefully you'll be sending a few back to me. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. And Kaya Hunt, if you're out there, I see the phone lines lighting up. Call in. This could be Kaya.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is Kaya.
The Kaya Hunt?
Yes.
That angry young woman?
No, just pissed off.
Pissed off young woman.
About the other night.
Well, we did talk a little bit about it, and I know we didn't have a lot of time last show. We're, of course, referring to the NAACP forum, the City Council candidate forum, where, as I've already mentioned before, not one question from the audience got asked. Did you learn anything about those council candidates from that forum, Kaya?
Well, you know what? I'm not very up on all of them. I don't have the luxury of time to attend forays to get to know these people, but...
Were any issues about the African-American community raised that you think should have been raised? Or let's say, what issues weren't raised?
Well, actually, I did have that question for them, and I wanted to know, you know, what are... Do you know of any concerns in the African-American community? And I'm sure I'm not going to set any preconceived notions, but I think that they probably wouldn't have an answer for that. And then my next question would have been, are there any? Are there any concerns that you know of? And do we have any? Or do we make a difference if we vote or not? Is there enough black people to even make a difference?
Give us a little of the demographic information, that if you know of it, Kaya. How many black people are there in Santa Cruz?
Okay, well, the last I know, which was like 3 years ago, I was doing some market research for my little store that I opened, mm-hmm. and we were at 2%.
2%, so that's 2% of 50,000.
Yeah, but that was based on a 10-year census.
So that's about 250 people.
Right.
Wow.
And the
so probably
thing,
maybe twice that now, I don't know.
Yeah.
Unless
probably.
You guys have been moving away.
There's been an influx of black people in town, which is a trip. But back then, I mean, I looked on the statistics for like SoCal, and that's where my family was, and I happen to know there's about like 10 black people that live in that town, that part of SoCal. And they weren't even counted. SoCal listed zero African Americans.
They just missed them. They were probably playing music or throwing dice or something.
I don't know. So that, to me, it makes me feel a little bit left out. Mm-hmm. And then I wanted to know, and as far as statistics, I don't have all the exact numbers, but I do know from being a black person and having family here that it is no longer my relatives or old family friends that only live here. There are black people I don't know, so I do know there are more black people in Santa Cruz
mm-hmm.
now. But we still aren't getting our issues. And some of the issues that I think we need to deal with is the fact that our NAACP is in desperate need of revamping. We need to, like, pick it up, and we need support from people. And it's a really good cause to join the NAACP. For those out there that might be interested, it looks good on your resume. You can learn some things, and it's a good area to grow and, like, expand.
Now, you are a long-time worker with the NAACP, right?
Not a long time, but...
5 years?
Yeah, 4 years I've been back.
There you go.
I've been back. And you know, I've been involved off and on, mm-hmm. and just due to time restraints, school and everything else, so... and little kids. So I don't always make all the meetings, but I do my part the best I can. And that's all we can do. And as far as the leaders in the black community, most of them are really busy. I heard you mentioning to another man, he said, oh, you know, he's too busy to do anything, blah, blah, blah. But in our case, it's true, and very few of us. Tony Hill is like the only black representative of Santa Cruz, you know? But he doesn't represent all the black people, you
yeah.
know?
What's the story about class division in the black community? I mean, I see what I would call working class and lower class black people on the street, and I talk to them. But at the NAACP, I usually see, you know, well-dressed, sort of upper-middle class people, and I'm wondering, is there any organization that actually represents folks in the hood, so to speak?
Through NAACP?
Yeah.
Well, the NAACP is a support system for everyone. However, they don't have all their subcommittees running up and running due to lack of attendance and whatnot. And people, and I'm not a spokesman for the spokesperson for the NAACP at all. This is just my opinion.
I understand.
But the as far as the class goes, people, most black people in Santa Cruz are employed and working. That's why you don't see them homeless that much. Because,
mm-hmm.
we know we got to survive.
Well, there's some black homeless people I see, and they're also working. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of homeless people work.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm just talking about the look, like
I gotcha.
You mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have to look a certain way to go to their jobs.
I gotcha.
And maintain, you know. So these are like university people in education,
mm-hmm.
mostly. And so, and we do have like George Au, who supports us, and
how does George Au support you?
He contributes to the NAACP scholarship fund.
Mm-hmm.
That helps students, you know, get out from here and go on to college.
Howe has come under a lot of criticism on the station for his essentially closing down low-income auto renter, Kevin Clark, and for his Nickelodeon parking lot, and then essentially didn't do anything with the parking lot, but he ruined a business that provided a lot of low-income people, and I would assume some African-American people, with affordable cars, and that was kind of a concern we had. But I just thought I would throw that at you for no good reason.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Because I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know much about George, but you say he gives money to the fund.
Uh-huh, and he's apparently, you know, very generous man. I don't know him, you know, personally. I've seen him, and I've written to him before, and he responded quickly, which was nice. That was cool.
How about Charlie Canfield? Does he enter into any of this? Or?
Nope. Don't know him. Mm. I'm your average Huckleberry Hound, and I'm just pissed off about that meeting last Thursday that wasted my time.
Tell me a little bit more about this. I know we talked about it before, but, you know, let's kick a little butt here.
Okay, I think that's what we need to do.
Okay.
I think people should start getting upset and having a problem with these people who take for granted the fact that we respect order for the most part, and, you know, when we need to just, like, blindside them sometime with just, like, excuse me, but this isn't going the way I planned. I mean, I wish I had done that night. If my daughter wasn't with me, I probably would have went off.
Well, and what would you have said to them? I mean, if you'd stood up and say, hold it, folks, what would you have said if you could have
I would have said, excuse me, but you can't have your closing statements. You're not going to have that time. Because we need to talk to you. We have questions, and you have not addressed our issues.
Because what happened was you had people making their little two-minute opening statements,
mm-hmm.
canned questions from
exactly.
four reporters who were already chosen beforehand.
Right.
Everybody was misled into believing that they should write questions on pieces of cardboard and hand them in, pieces of little index cards, none of which were raised.
Nope.
And finally, at the end, you got, as you said, another chance for these candidates to fluff themselves in front of the audience.
Exactly.
And none of them really raising black issues at all, as far as I could see.
Or women's issues.
Or women's issues, yeah.
None of those. And that those are my personal concerns. And it just really, really, really upset me. I felt like I'd been hoodwinked, you know, like, you know, totally bamboozled. I was mad. I was like, how can they do this? I took time out for my child's bedtime.
Mm-hmm.
To be here so I can ask some questions and, you know, see these people in action because I don't have that luxury of time. I depend on these things, these forums, and, you know, the TV, you know, public television,
mm-hmm.
to find out about them. And when I get two nights of the same thing, that's not a lot to go with, first of all, you know, the same, they have canned questions, canned answers.
Talking about the scan forum followed by the... this forum?
Yeah, because I watched it on TV till 2 o'clock in the morning.
And by the way, it was also the People's Democratic Club was another canned forum, and then there was the homeless census report, which was, I guess, two nights ago, Friday night on community television, where they had some candidates, and I hear that was equally vapid. And you get the Sentinel saying in its editorial this morning, I don't know if you read it, oh, it's so wonderful, these city council candidates are so civil to each other. They're just all so polite, you know. What do you think?
I noticed that too.
So here you are, you stand up and you say, okay, we are not going to allow this stupid two-minute summary where we all get to hear you say what wonderful people you are again. Instead, I want to know what. Now, what would you say to them?
I want to know what, just like I said,
mm-hmm.
do you know of any concerns in the African-American community?
And now...
And if so... How would you address them?
And here you are. Suddenly you are a candidate up there, and you are asked that question. What do you say?
Well, I'm not a candidate.
Right.
But I know that what my concerns are and what are concerns in the city is the fact that the racial climate in the city is out of control.
And tell me about that.
It's blatant. It's rude. The downtown area, the people are very comfortable with treating you rude and loud-talking you and basically following you around the stores and making you feel very unwanted.
Well, we've got to be sure you don't slip anything into your purse.
Of course, mm-hmm. because I'm black. Meanwhile, the person they should be watching is like cleaning them out.
Well, what you
got to
do is you got to do a partnership. Bring
exactly,
in bring in some white person, and you be the distraction. You know,
right.
That's a great idea.
Oh yeah, that's.
Hey, listen, we'll do that together.
It.
You and me, we'll work on that. Though I guess I'm a little bit too bearded for that one.
Well, the thing is, there's nothing that anyone can do. When you go to the NAACP, there's not enough firepower to go out and kick their butts, and they know it. So they're behaving this way, and they're getting away with it, and it needs to be taken care of. And I suggest, and I propose, and if I was on the city council, I would say, good, we're going to set up a sting operation. You can get two students from UCSC who want to be a part of racial, you know, the climate or whatever their major is, what they're into, to come down and volunteer or their services to come and do these things where they have a little tape recorder and a hidden camera and see these people and how they actually act. And then publicly show them on public access television.
Mm-hmm. That's a great idea.
And kick their ass because it's rude. I am from here. I'm a pretty decent person. But I don't appreciate having to grit my teeth, and I don't do it very often. But when my daughter's with me, I have to do that. I'm not going to let
her. No, I suggest, Kaya,
wild out.
We're talking to Kaya Hunt here on Free Radio about how black people are treated in Santa Cruz, mm-hmm. and I'm going to suggest that, you know, you don't need to get a lot of people to do this. You know, in fact, I know a woman who right now with a video camera might be interested in going around with you.
Oh, great.
And doing and you know, sort of hanging out in the side of the store while you or somebody else just looks around and gets followed around by one of the personnel and hassled and takes video of the whole thing. So I think that could be done without a major project. I think that could be done just by, in fact, if you contact my producer, she can put you in touch with that woman.
Great.
And phone number is 423-HUFF. For anybody listening, by the way, if there are any, I understand you've called some folks mm-hmm. who are interested, black, white, and blue of skin.
Exactly.
However, and anyone who's interested can give a call to 423-HUFF who wants to help with this, shall we say, Expose the Bigots project.
Perfect.
Which I think would cover it, 423-HUFF, and we can start rolling on it. And it's not like we're not engaging in a conspiracy at all. We're engaging in an open discussion of how do you stop discrimination and abuse against people who don't deserve to be treated that way.
Thank you, and that's perfectly well put. Thank you so much for saying that. And that's one issue. And as far as the police are concerned, I'm like leading you right now, but
please.
You mentioned it earlier, and I personally don't have a problem with the police because I usually don't have to do anything to get my ass in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But I am a black woman, and I have to say, I've been treated okay by the police. I got pulled over the other day because my door got ripped off my car, and it's hanging on by bungee cords.
Mm-hmm.
Totally illegal, and my car is being a polluter right now. But he pulled me over, and he didn't give me any shit. And I think it has to do with the fact that this racial profiling is an issue, and it's coming up. And they're not too comfortable with messing with people right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying this because that the by saying something and putting something out there, people start acting right.
Mm-hmm.
When it is up front, people act right. And that's why I want to see what these people are planning to do with racial issues. It needs to be put up front. So
well,
something can be done about it, and people can put themselves back in check because they're not going to, they cannot behave this way.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot, they feel like they can. They get mad at you when you demand some respect. Suddenly, I'm this, like, irate black person. I got black rage.
You're just uppity, man.
Yes, and then when they want their respect, and I'm not trying to give it to them, there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I'm going to give you the same respect you give me, and I'm not afraid of you. I'm not afraid of white people. I was raised with them.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I hope you take me out to dinner as well.
Well, some people are like that. They're mm-hmm. like, oh, you know, they're afraid of white folks. It's like, no, why?
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever. Anyways, I have a beautiful blended child, and so I'm not going to tolerate it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not.
Well, I think that the idea of coming up front is a very good idea. I've been trying to get the police review board to come up front and demand that Belcher, who is our police chief, or I should say their police chief, put into force what 80% of the police departments of the state have, which is a mandatory system of gathering stats. Whenever they stop someone, they note the reason for the stop, the person's racial composition. I would like to see whether they're homeless or not, too, whether they're poor, whether they're...
Right.
Because I think that there is a disproportionate number of stops of people who are poor and homeless. And I think that a lot of the shit happens without any kind of tickets being given. They just fuck with you.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, now that my car is pretty jacked up looking right now, I've been looked at a lot more by the police, and I actually got pulled over. So I hear that 100%. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And the way to do that is the police review board, of course, the way to do that is demand that city council candidates take a real strong, clear stand on that, and to demand that they not just do it if they get elected, but that they come to city council before they're elected, and I guess that would be the next city council meeting is in a, there's one on Tuesday that's a closed session that I'm asking people to come to support the tenants of the Dolphin and Lee, who are going to get screwed when the Dolphin gets handed over to this Mercy Charities housing group without protections for the tenants. But the next real council meeting is on the Tuesday after, a week from Tuesday, and that's when people can come down to city council, including city council candidates, including members of the black community, and say, hey, San Jose is doing, you know, they're shooting people dead, of course, but they're also doing racial, you know, they're supposedly now going to be doing this, these informational requirements of the police. Why the hell isn't Chief Belcher doing this? You can also call the Citizens Police Review Board, ha ha ha, at 420-6295, for all of you out there who have pencils, 420-6295, and say, get off your fat white duffs. And they are fat white duffs, I got to tell you, pretty much. There are a few slim white duffs, I guess. And there's one Latino duff, sort of. But he's a pro-police Latino duff, like another Michael Hernandez that we know. And tell them to take some action to require the police department do something about the issue of documenting at stops. The police chief's last statement on this a month ago was through his subordinate sergeant... And they're only going to be stopped, as you said, when people who are irate and who are in numbers say, no way.
I'm not having this. Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
As far as the police review board goes, I told you I'm not very up on these things. What, who runs this board? Is it civilian or police? Is the police police the police?
Okay, the police actually police the police in the sense that they do all the real investigations, they do all the running around and asking the witnesses questions. In theory, the CPRB, the Citizens Police Rubber Stamping Board, as I call it, or Review Board, as they call themselves, could actually hold public hearings, they could subpoena police officers, they have the power to do this.
And it's a civilian.
It is a civilian board appointed by the city council, but they have never done that. Instead, what they do is they look at the police reports and then they make a decision as to whether they support the police reports or not. They don't independently get any information, they don't listen to any testimony, they don't cross-examine the witnesses. They are, in fact, a creature of the police department, and it's interesting, according to what I've heard recently in a study done at Palo Alto, I heard this only secondhand, the longer people stay on these boards, the more chummy they get with the police.
Right.
So it's because they're not interested in talking to you or me. Instead, they talk to the cops.
They want friends in the police department.
Yeah, they want things to run smoothly. They want things to be really...
For them.
Right. And what happens, of course, is the complete destruction of any independent police review. It simply becomes more and more of a fig leaf for the cops.
So how often do they change?
They change whenever a board member resigns or when a new city... I think they have four-year terms.
Okay.
And a city council member, if a city council member is defeated in an election, a new council member comes on and he or she appoints a board member, and they take 6 months. You know, for the first 6 months, they'll say they're not doing anything, and then for the rest of the time, they get closer and closer to the police department. I mean, it's a complete joke.
Okay.
Is the problem. But it doesn't mean you shouldn't get people to file complaints, because you can create a record. The record, you know, will be, they'll say, oh, complaint dump, complaint dump, complaint dump. But the complaints are kept for 5 years. And so if a police officer keeps amassing complaints, defense attorneys have the right to uncover these with judicial help and so-called pitches motions, so they can actually track down and question people about this themselves in later civil cases. The way to really get the cops, of course, is to sue their asses off in court and to sue the city. That, of course, is more expensive. Or to have large public demonstrations in front of the police department, which embarrasses them.
You know, that's of course what I like to see happen, because I don't have the money for lawsuits or the trust in the local attorneys,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Okay, well, I got to go soon, but I wanted to say one more thing in regards to the homeless.
Sure.
Because I know that's the issue for you that you really are attacking vigorously.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something, I wrote it down, so you were talking about it, and it came to my mind that these people in the city council and other groups that can help or, you know, just don't want to, they take for granted that these people have no time outside of survival to address the issues, and that needs to change. It needs to change. And you know more about it than I do, but they need to show these people, you know how it is when you take it for granted something, you're like, oh, whatever, and then when it comes up and slaps you upside your head, you're like, oh, shit, I better look at this. You guys need to come up with another plan, because whatever's happening right now is not working that good.
You're talking about the council's lack of plan or pseudo plan?
The fact that they can like brush you guys off pretty much. I mean, I know you're kicking ass and you got their attention, but they
brushed us off. Yeah, that's quite true.
Yeah.
And it's going to require to kick some more ass before we get their attention again.
Yeah.
Maybe we can do it again as a coalition. We need people who are homeless, people who are black, people who are Latino, women, youth,
exactly.
Older folks who are getting fucked with, to stand up and say, we want rent control and we want it now. We want to get, you know, some basic protections for renters. We want to end this police department cover-up system. When that happens, I think we'll see some real changes, not because we elect some clowns who blather on the city council forums, mind you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, so good luck with that, and thank you for letting me blab my mouth on this radio station.
Call and blab some more, and maybe we'll get a couple calls talking about your blabbing.
Okay.
All right.
That's good for me.
Okay.
And I'll call your... program director?
423 Huff is the number. If you want to help out Kaya and others who want to find some way to hold merchants and other bigots accountable when they're engaging in anti-black discrimination, give a call to 423 Huff.
Thank you so much, Richard.
Thank you. Robert.
Robert, sorry.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And we are coming to the end of this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. We have about 6 minutes left. Phone number here is 427-3772. If any of you have been listening in and want to call in, it looks like somebody has.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Hi, Robert. This is Adrian. I've spoken to you a few times. I don't think you remember me.
No problem.
But
go ahead, Adrian.
I wanted to call in support of what the two of you were saying, that I think that it's extremely classist down there, and it makes me pretty sick with places like Bunny Shoes, Jen's Gallery, and Artisans, that, I don't know, you have to be some kind of a dot-commy Los Gatos type in order to not be looked over, you know.
Have you yourself found that's happened? Or?
Yes, I have the best Santa Cruz credentials you could possibly get. I was conceived on Halberman and born on Emmeline.
Huh. Whoa.
And the people in the little green outfits looked at me as I was walking downtown.
Oh, the hosts.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And said...
Catherine Byers' little Gestapo squad.
Exactly. And they said, keep it moving.
Really?
Me.
Really?
Yeah.
When was this?
This was a couple of years ago, but...
You know, they've changed. Now they're in purple.
Well...
So maybe there's a whole new outlook.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Well, I think that they probably... I would like to know what kind of training they have, and I'd like to know how much they're getting paid and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as far as I could tell, they were just sort of minimum wage or whatever people who didn't particularly know the difference between shoplifters or regular people looking in the windows and looking for a bench to sit on or a bathroom, you know?
Right.
And then the other question I have is, why is it, if Santa Cruz is such a little humble pie small town and whatnot, that we show ourselves off as and super progressive, why is it that you have to be so well known in order to run for city council? How come people who are not well known never get elected? Those are my questions to you.
Okay. Well, my answer offhand is that most people are very cynical about politics because they see most of the people running don't give a shit. And those who do don't usually have the funding to put out their message on billboards and radio and in the newspaper. Somebody like Steve Argue, for example, who I think is one of the only genuine, legitimate candidates that I have any confidence in, although I kind of like what Scott Bugenthal says, and I've seen Ed Porter do some good things, but
And Bonnie Moore has made some statements about the sleeping ban, but when it comes to standing up in a public forum and leading the community, he's the only one who does it. And, you know, I guess cynics would say, oh, it's because he's not going to be elected and he can afford to say what he wants. You know, he can be honest because he doesn't have to pander to the majority and worry about getting the votes. But I look at it differently. I don't think it even is important to be on the city council. I think it's important to lead the community. If you lead the community, you don't even have to be on the city council. You can bring the people to the city council and force the city council to come to the community. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's just sort of a cute way of talking. But I think that's really what happens. When masses of people show up, the city council backs down and starts listening. And that's what we need to do. We need people who are going to lead and continue to lead whether they get elected or not. And I don't know if I've answered your question at all.
No, that sounds pretty good. And I've seen his flyers around, so I think for a lot of us who are pedestrian,
uh-huh.
that works pretty good. Being on a radio show like he has one I listened to yesterday and then seeing the flyers, for me that's enough for someone to, you know, get out their name.
Yeah, and I would encourage people to consider just doing what's called a bullet ballot for Steve Argue, and that's not a bullet to the head. Or shooting the ballot, it means only writing in Steve, only voting for Steve Argue, and then leaving the rest of the ballot blank. And you might think, oh, I'm wasting it because I could vote for four people. No, you're not, because when you vote for just one, you make it more likely that one will win, because you don't provide the extra votes that would dilute his candidacy. So people who are listening who think that they can't find any other candidates should not look around for second, third, fourth, and choices. They should just vote Steve Argue on November 7th. I also encourage you, Adrian, and other people out there to give a call to 423-HUFF if you want to help this Kaya Hunt project of stopping the bigotry downtown, because you don't have to, you know, like be an on-the-spot person. You could be a support person, and I think the more people who express an interest in this, the more likely it is to happen. So I'll encourage you to give a call on that, and everybody else to give a call, too.
Well, thank you very much.
Hey, thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
And as the clock ticks down here in the last 30 seconds, there's still no sign of the next talk show host, so I can grab the next 3 hours. Maybe we can proceed. I was going to do a Brown Act update. That's my lawsuit filed against the City of Santa Cruz and the 7 city council members. But first, let's hear this phone call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
This is Chad for the next 3 hours.
Ah, yes. Go ahead.
How you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah, I think Steve Argue's about the only person that'll make any kind of realistic, you know, change.
Mm-hmm.
The other ones just seem to kind of be like, give them what they want, blah, blah, blah.
Well, it's you know, it's always possible that Fred Geiger, who called in earlier, may be right, that once you get enough progressive, they'll all start being, you know, they'll all buck each other's courage up, and they'll say, well, maybe we can do something that we haven't been even willing to talk about doing before.
And that's when the progressives versus who?
Hmm?
And that's when the progressives versus who?
Right.
On the city council? Who's the other people?
Well, the so-called progressives are, and I don't, you know, don't seem terribly progressive, are Sugar, Crone, and I guess you might, people who call themselves progressive are Ed Porter and Scott Bugenthal, and Emily Riley would say she's progressive, but I don't particularly think so. None of these people on the sleeping ban is willing to take a strong stand, and so it's... But, you know, the theory is, well, if they were all there together, that they could say, well, we'll do it anyway. But still, they could still be afraid of conservatives in the community. So I don't know if I agree with Fred Geiger on that. I'm more likely to say, if they won't come out strongly on these issues now, why the hell should they come out strongly later? I mean, you know, after they're elected, they can do what they want. Well,
after
I don't think so. After they're elected, they're likely to get more conservative,
my
theory.
Well, yeah, like you're talking about the police review board people.
And the police review board, of course, is one of those little bad jokes that we already have. Arnie Leff is one of the worst jokes because he's running for office at the same time as he's refusing to hold meetings with the city council subcommittee that he was supposed to hold for the last 8 months to make the law stronger. So if he isn't even going to hold those meetings, why the hell should we pay any attention to what he has to say as he's running for city council? He is a joke. And when I challenged him in public 4 days ago at the NAACP forum, I said, what's up, Arnie? When's the meeting time? He said, I'm not going to talk about it, and he ran out. So Arnie is, you know, he's just another example of the politicians who will not stand up in public places and answer questions in a straightforward way. And you can have all the civility and politeness you want, but if it's meaningless civility, then you've got business as usual and the same kind of oppressive day-to-day nonsense of not dealing with the real issues that you always have. Anything you can say now, since I've taken up all your time there, Merlin.
Well, there's a benefit concert today. You want to hear about it?
Sure, go ahead.
It's at Mose Elliott for Levi Castro, a surfer that broke his neck, paralyzed from the neck down.
Gotcha.
And, yeah, it's at Mose Elliott. It's, they have Vincent Sear, Herbert, Riff Raff, here Kitty Kitty, Chaos Lounge, Dilla Gaff, a bunch of bands.
Uh-huh.
Pretty much from 1 o'clock this afternoon until God knows what time it's going to be
over. So it's starting right now and going on.
Yeah, it starts at 1, and I really don't know what time it's going to be over.
Sounds good.
And all the money's going towards Levi Castle's medical expenses.
Dig it.
Like that.
Well, thank you, Merlin. I'll roll on you now.
All right. Thank you.
All righty.
Bye.
And Brown Act, I was talking about beforehand. The Brown Act requires that all meetings be open to the public, that people be allowed to speak without being cut off, interrupted, or censored in what they're saying, that people be informed beforehand of what the city council is going to be doing so that they don't get fast ones pushed on, that they get to see the material the city council looks at, that, and so forth and so on. Now, well, we have seen many, many Brown Act violations under Mayor Sugar, who seems to have a combination of arrogance, impatience, and kind of a personal vindictiveness, which has made his reign rather awesome to behold. He's had four activists arrested, removed from the chambers. Actually, Phil Bearer, five activists if you count Phil Bearer. Phil Bearer, Michael Tomasi, myself, David Silva, and James Ney, were three of us were directly targeted, and the rest, and the other two were, I guess, ready to be targeted. I mean, he had set up an attitude in his mind before he started about what was going to be required of these people that was not required of other individuals who were doing the same kinds of things, making the same kinds of statements. The Brown Act requires that you not describe an agenda item as one thing and then vote on something else, which is what Catherine Byers did when she ended the safe sleeping zones. It requires that if you create a committee to which you give money and which one of your city council members sits on as a voting member, such as Mercy Charities Housing's Advisory Board, that those meetings be open. None of those meetings have been open to the public. Violation of the Brown Act. It requires that you not interrupt speakers who are speaking at the mic and that you provide them all a fair and relatively equal amount of time. This was not done, has not been done to literally a dozen speakers on a dozen different occasions at city council. And it's a violation of the Brown Act. The Brown Act requires that if this is done, the business conducted has to be repeated, and there are criminal penalties if this is done intentionally. A lawsuit was filed 3 weeks ago. I filed it, and we're trying to amass more information, and at some time in the next year, it should go to court. Attorney John Barrasoni called me last week, and he asked for a week's extension in replying from the city. I said, sure, take a week, and we're going to hopefully ourselves add to the information in that lawsuit, supplement the information, and if you yourselves have any instances where you've been suppressed by the city council or seen process that you regard as undemocratic, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. There is a SCAN Housing and Homelessness Committee meeting coming up. I believe it is at 9:30 on Friday at the SCAN HQ at 314 Laurel. Now, it could be Thursday, though, so if you want to be sure, you want to come to this Housing and Homelessness Committee, give a call to 423-HUFF for more information. The Homeless Working Group meets on Friday at 3 o'clock, goes from 3 to 5. We're going to be talking about which candidates to endorse, or information actually to get out. We're designing a very simple questionnaire for candidates, and then we're going to put out that information to the public. They're going to say yes, no, or they're not going to answer, and we'll see what they give out and pass that on to the community. Tuesday and Thursday, Club Cruise at 7 o'clock on Channel 27, or is it 26? I can never be sure. Has a repeat show with host Becky Johnson and guests Julie Costanza Gomez and Ed Fry. Costanza Gomez is the manager of the Lee Apartments. Ed Fry is an attorney who defended some people that Mercy Charities Housing kicked out of their housing and wouldn't let back in. Somewhat similar to what's coming up for the Dolphin tenants. Those are the announcements. And again, I invite anybody interested in this Bigots Begone project to give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. A couple of other bits of information. Hoboken, New Jersey. Well, here's a quick call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, quick call. This is Lydia and the next Homeless and Housing Committee. meeting for SCAN is 9:30 on Wednesday, the 4th.
Ooh, thank you very much, Lydia.
For sure.
Appreciate
okay.
that.
That's Wednesday at 9:30 at 314 Laurel Street, if you want to come to the SCAN Housing and Homelessness Committee meeting. Non-SCAN members are allowed to come and participate, even though we've had some controversy with more conservative members on that issue. That is my understanding, and it's my understanding from personal experience. I was repeatedly at SCAN meetings, these housing committee meetings, before I was a member. I never voted at them, but I was there and observing the process of Bernice Belton and Catherine Byers as proxies pushing through the Mercy Charities Housing Dolphin Lee Hispanics Begone project, which would provide affordable housing for some, but not guarantee housing to all those currently in housing. Again, from Hoboken, New Jersey, a letter from Food Not Bombs. Dear friends, Food Not Bombs Hoboken has been serving food in the Lackawanna Park since April 2000, but lately we got shut down by city officials whose arguments were that we didn't have appropriate permits for serving food to the public. The real reason is that we are trying to show other people that the problem of homelessness and poverty exists even in areas like Hoboken. This is something that city officials don't feel comfortable with. On Labor Day, we were asked to leave the park and throw out all our food. One weekend after that, when we tried to come to the park, all the guys usually living there got kicked out before we showed up. We still continue serving food here, even though we don't have tables and banners. And they're organizing a protest on October 14th, a public demonstration at City Hall in Hoboken to show poverty, high rent, and other problems to the public. Festive celebration, street theater, radical cheerleaders, drum circle, food sharing, speeches, and so forth. And if you're interested in getting in touch with them, you can email them at foodnotbombs, one word, underline, Hoboken, at hotmail.com. And they're on the website at http://go.to/foodnotbombs_Hoboken. I don't expect you to get all that down, but if you call 423-HUFF, we'll give it to you at a slower pace, and you'll actually be able to make a note of it. What else have we got here? We kind of are running through these pages. I've got a few notes from Donna Dice, who is the tireless worker from the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz. She writes of Residentes Unidos, "I'm glad they are still working in a united and persistent way. The Capitola Redevelopment Agency is on the political hot seat for using housing money for other purposes, like widening 41st Avenue. Another idea is all commercial housing to have an upstairs rental unit, like the stupid parking garage on Water and Soquel. It works back east." And she says anything that she says about tenants and housing is okay to quote on the air via your email, so I'm doing that. She thanks us for keeping tenant issues in the public eye, and she read in the paper that their 40-unit apartment on the beach left of Seabright Avenue, not quite sure what she's saying about it. She wants to see the tenants organized. Oh, the apartment sold for a record $10 million. Also, sheriffs, deputies, and correctional officers are saying they can't afford to live there and that a third leave the county, which shows the quality of law enforcement we have here. And that's what's cooking. And New York City, today, October 1st, is the first day of Mayor Giuliani's rent guideline board's new rent increases when they take effect. All new leases and lease renewals for rent-stabilized apartments after October 1st will be hit with the largest increases since 1996. At least they have stabilized apartments. It would be nice if we had a rent control movement here, and I would encourage people who are interested in that to also mention that on the Huff line at 423-HUFF. If you want to start raising issues of rent control, mention it, and if you're interested in also this bigotry project, this bash bigotry project, give a call, because I think that that's certainly very important as well. Well, we actually have a few more deals here. Here is Arnie Leff, who I've been quite critical of, at the Homeless Working Group, making some comments before the session, in which essentially he's saying he's not interested in answering my questions. So this might be amusing for us to hear and a bit revealing.
So that's kind of where we are on that issue.
What is the main opposition for doing safe sleeping zones, whether it's the county building or...
And actually, we've gone a bit beyond that. I want to make sure we actually start with where things began. So I'm going to rewind it a bit and try to get back to where things started. It's a little makeshift here. Let's go back a little further. Again, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and this is, we're going a little over time. Our next talk show hasn't arrived yet. They probably will soon. They usually come in like gangbusters, and at the Little Red Hen, that's a lot of good stuff for younger folks. Let's see what we got going here.
Whether it's going to be Emmeline or whatever, is the main opposition coming from the leadership, the county leadership or officials, because they're afraid of neighborhood complaints?
This is Arnie Leff.
Because they're afraid something's going to happen? I don't quite understand what the problem is. I know people are saying no, but I don't understand why.
I think there's a combination of factors. Like in the industrial parks, the businesses were upset and the residents were upset because it was in their neighborhood.
Right.
It's a NIMBY process we seem to be dealing with in the community big time. In talking with Marty Warmouth, who also said that she was
Michael Schmidt speaking.
Sleeping zones, the concern was that somehow by acknowledging and setting up a place like that, they might be acknowledging that they've got this big problem.
And what Michael Schmidt is talking about is the safe sleeping zone proposed at Emmeline Street by the homeless working group and by Michael Schmidt, where at night people could park their vehicles and sleep there, and they'd be gone by dawn. I'm actually going to try to play the earlier part of the Arnie Leff statement where he refuses to answer questions on the sleeping ban because I am posing them, which I think is a perfect example of the kinds of the dangers of bad process that could be happening if that attitude prevails at City Council, where instead of dealing with the issues, personalities become the focus. Jerry Henry went to court on Friday. He was sentenced to 3 years probation and a stay-away order from the upper half of the Aptos Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center. He had asked that he only be given a stay-away order from the businesses that alleged he had interfered with them by counseling young people outside and appearing like a ragamuffin person who is not as, should we say, upscale in his dress as your average Aptos Rancho Del Mar shopper. Those stores were Gottschalk's, Rancho Liquors, Coffee Roasting Company, and I guess the Sheriff's Substation. He had said he would like the stay-away order limited there, and also he's appealing his convictions, which even the judge has said the whole case should never have come to court. It should have been a civil injunction and shouldn't have been criminal charges. Henry was accused of being a, quote, public nuisance. The actual public nuisance, of course, was the DA, who spent $25,000 or more, $25,000 to $100,000, prosecuting Jerry Henry because the Rancho Del Mar bosses wanted him out of there, and they couldn't do it with civil process because they had no basis for doing it. Instead, they had to concoct a charge tailored out of slander and false statements and selective stuff from the last 3 years, and that was what Jerry Henry has been subjected to. He has been barred from the upper part of the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center. I guess it's above Ace, including above and above Ace Hardware. So that we're going to play a little bit of some of the discussion before that hearing, and we'll try to skip to some of the discussion that happened, plus a few other incidental items in court, and then we'll go back if we can find the Arnie Leff. He's the head of the Police Review Board, I remind you, and he's also running for City Council. His appearance before the Homeless Working Group.
Okay, it's about 15 to 9 on September 29th. We're here at the Santa Cruz County Courthouse talking to
Andrew Flores.
And Andrew, you're here because of a marijuana crime, is that correct?
That is correct, a marijuana crime.
And what happened?
Oh, a police officer rode a bicycle by my car and got off his bike and claimed that he could smell unburnt marijuana. And then proceeded, and he didn't say it with words, but his fashion, his mannerism was, if you just give me the little bit that you have, I won't write you a ticket or anything. He didn't necessarily tell me those words, but the way he acted left me with that impression. And then I gave him the little bit, and he proceeded to go off the handle. Like,
And was this a Santa Cruz police officer or deputy or?
Santa Cruz police officer.
Where did this happen?
By the Elm Street Mission.
How long ago?
About a month ago.
And like a little amount, you mean like a kilo or?
No, not even like, not even an eighth, maybe 2 grams.
And who was the name of the officer?
Oh, I don't remember. But I already am late for court, too.
Were you taken to jail or just
no,
written a ticket?
No, just given a ticket.
Plead not guilty.
Not guilty.
Oh, fine. He's getting shy. I mean, I'm outside
I'll
department,
talk to you
too.
Afterwards.
Okay, I just wanted to get a prediction before. Any predictions, Jerry Henry?
I'd hate to predict this one. The prediction is they're unpredictable.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Jerry. Here we have a letter with the jury dated yesterday to the judge. Just wanted to tell you that Jerry Henry has never been a problem at Safeway 640 in Aptos. He's welcome anytime, just like all our other customers. Thank you, Russell Larson, front-end manager, Safeway 640. Looks pretty official to me, Jerry. You've been paying this man off in produce? Nah. What's the story?
Nah, he used to be manager of the produce department himself, you know? Nah. Just known him for 20 years. He's just the oldest employee at Rancho Del Mar. Yeah, he's probably been there longer than any employee that works at the place.
There's some special homosexual relationship between the two of you?
No, don't think so.
Have you been coercing and frightening his family in order to get this testimony?
No, but...
So in other words...
They're just the biggest person at the Chauvin Center, biggest entity there, Safeway. They've never had a problem with me. It's real strange.
Apparently not the most powerful, because it looks like the people near the sheriff's...
It emanates from one of the smallest stores in the Chauvin Center. I think that's the sheriff's department, and they always refer to themselves as their business, and it's kind of a shame if the sheriff's department's in business.
Of course, we're here with the Jerry Henry sentencing hearing, which is going to be... shortly, we hope.
Not that shortly. Kovacevic just asked for Kelsey to call the case next, and he says he has a number of witnesses, and Kelsey says, if you have witnesses, no way. That'll be much later.
I see. Well, so much
for... My witnesses aren't here. Jeff hasn't arrived, and everybody needs to be here.
Of course, this is the man.
Kovacevic, which is
his crime is appearing less than credit card worthy in front of the. Although you probably do have a credit card, don't you?
Oh yeah, I have a credit card.
That was one of the problems originally.
I don't think they think I'm supposed to have a platinum credit card. That seemed to be the problem.
So you were really questionable in many respects. Yeah. They had many questionables about you.
People aren't supposed to have credit cards that look like me, I think. And some people.
This is a man with old sneakers, a rather raggedy
this
gray
beard. This is the pair I bought the day they arrested me.
And the
first day they this
rather
this
wrinkled pants, a little too thin for my baggy gray sweater. I mean, the man deserves a...
This is a handmade sweater.
A new tailor, that's for damn sure.
It's a handmade sweater.
With leaves on it, old leaves on his sweater. What kind of a guy comes to court wearing leaves? Well, we'll talk about this later. Lurking about the courthouse, we have notorious bearded cigarette smoker and coffee drinker, Richard Quigley. Richard, what's bringing you to this neck of the woods? That doesn't count as an answer. Hang on. So, what are you doing here, and why are you nursing this coffee at the front of Department 2?
Well, I got to go in there. Jerry asked me to come down here today and explain to the judge why they shouldn't give him life.
I see. Well, I think a life would be good for at least the district attorney's office, since they seem to be obsessed with these bizarre and pointless prosecutions.
Well, according to Ruiz, this is an extremely important case. The business interests of Gottschalk.
Sergeant Clark and Officer Evelyn. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, you know those two?
Unfortunately, I do, yes.
Which one's Evelyn? Oh, Evelyn's the big guy.
Evelyn's the big guy.
Clark's the little guy.
The dumb one.
Now, please. That's that was not my comment. That was by another individual here.
He's pretty funny, by the way. He writes jaywalking tickets. I just can't find out where, because I want to go down and get one.
I can prove he's dumb.
You're going to prove it here today?
No.
The courts have already ordered it. You cannot have an IQ exceeding 125 and be a cop.
So here you have it, the police bashing session by the individual who claims...
How you doing,
hey,
my friend?
How you doing, man?
The infamous Sergeant Clark and
erotic death.
The autoerotic Sergeant Clark.
Yeah.
bullshit.
Now, don't get excited. Sergeant Clark likes that.
Are you harassing Sergeant Clark in the hallway?
And he deserves harassing everywhere we see.
Actually, you're referring to an incident where Sergeant Clark, on observing a homeless man who hanged himself, described it jocularly as an autoerotic death.
A suicide
that in fact was contradicted by the coroner, but the sergeant did not retract his comments. In fact, they were spread by Sergeant Baker and Deputy Chief Locke.
And given the rubber stamp by the CPRB, thank you very much.
Unfortunately, that too was the case.
CPRB.
That's the Citizens Police Rubber Stamping Board. You may have heard about them.
Yeah. There you go, sort of like our grand jury.
Not that grand, though.
So Ruiz and his never-ending effort to make things better for Gottschalks under their former management. By the way, they did fire the bitch that was having trouble running the store and blamed it all on Jerry Henry.
Oh, really?
Apparently.
Claudia Easterby?
Oh, yeah, she was fired long ago. And
is that right out in the testimony? I don't think so.
No, they've never talked about the fact that she got fired. It was interesting. It was Tuesday, I think it was. I went to Ace Hardware to pick up some stuff. And I walked in there, and I was getting batteries for my handheld tape recorder. And I pointed out to the lady behind the counter why I do that, because it's always a good idea to explain why you're doing stuff to citizens so they know it's necessary to carry tape recorders. And she says, oh, yeah, I know. She says, I saw Claudia slap that out of your hand. I said, no, Claudia didn't slap it out of my hand. She slapped it out of Mr. Henry's hand, but it's a common mistake. You know, it's an identity mistake. In fact, they just convicted him of a bunch of stuff that I'm virtually certain was me, but that's nothing I can do about that.
And approaching is do-nothing Daryl Cole of the Santa Cruz Sentinel, but go ahead.
Oh, okay. Anyway, so then she talked about how crazy Claudia was and how crazy, and that she got fired a while back and that she went to Gilroy and got a job and got fired over there. But she was, and I said, well, did either Jerry or myself ever scare you or any of the other people working at that store? Oh, no. It was all Claudia. She's just crazy. I'm sitting here listening to this, and I'm saying, well, damn.
Bring her to the sentencing hearing.
Well, we would like to have brought her to the trial, but, you know, the district attorney wasn't interested in the facts. They never should have had a trial. They should have sat down at the table and let those crazies sit on one side and Jerry Henry sit on the other and talk about what was going on, and a blind man would have seen what was happening.
And then we have a largely hard-to-hear tape of the actual sentencing hearing, which is for private notes. If anybody actually wants to hear that, please get in touch with me at 423-HUFF. It was a long tape. There were some eloquent statements in favor of Jerry Henry. There were some slanders against Jerry Henry by the merchants who wanted to have him removed from the shopping center come hell or high water. They got their wish. He was, again, not convicted of any acts of violence, any acts of vandalism. He was convicted of, in essence, he was counseling young people. They had a right to say to First Alarm Security and Sheriff's deputies, no, I'm not going to move on. I have a right to be here. And when they started harassing Henry, they accused him of interfering with a business because he did not move on and because he protested their attempts to harass him. And really, that sort of sums it up. He got held twice on $100,000 bail. Yes, believe it or not, $100,000 bail. And now faces 3 years of probation, although it's being appealed to a higher court, and we would hope that the higher court will throw this completely political prosecution out. But given our current state of affairs, where the police are sacred, it's hard to tell what's going to happen. And speaking of police being sacred, let's go back to the homeless working group where Arnie Leff, who's the chair of the police review board and supposed to be one of our watchdogs, making sure the police don't step over the boundaries, and of course does nothing of the kind, talks about, or tries to avoid talking about issues. He's also there with Bonnie Moore, Dick DeBrava, and there was a fourth person there. I think Scott Kennedy came in at some point, but we're going to be hearing the early part of that session, which was 3 weeks ago on Friday, more or less.
About that, but
Michael
anyway,
Schmidt.
Did Rob want to say anything?
I think he might be looking
Becky
for
Becky Johnson preparing.
Copy
people
camping
kind of filing
ordinance.
In and preparing here.
Oh, you got it. Here.
Okay. Oh, is there another copy that he's going to
make
available to the rest of...
Camping ordinance, I think.
This is kind of a cruddy copy. This is a better one, so if there's something you can't read on here, use the master copy.
Robert, you want to give a little one or two-minute huff overview here?
Sure. Originally, we planned to ask 3 questions to make it easier, and we've expanded them because we're hoping that if you want to talk about other areas, you can do that too. The questions involve the area first around criminalization of homeless, which involves the sleeping ban, and the question on that is fundamentally, do you favor striking sections A and B of the sleeping ban? And you favor striking them in a way that you would take action immediately on reaching city council without waiting for, essentially, so that it would come into effect before Christmas. You would raise the issue before Christmas, even if you were alone on the council and wanting to do it. That it would be something that would be, you take a leadership position on and just introduce it, because we had the problem with the last council, they didn't do that. Secondly, the second issue we're considering is rent control and tenant protection, which involves such things as a rent control ordinance and also protection for the tenants in the Dolphin Apartments. It's been a concern of a lot of us for about the last year. And that's the second question, which we can explain in more detail. And the third question has to do with community control of police, because police and the homeless are often, they're kind of the first line that the police get to. Homeless people are out there all the time. And we're looking for, we've got some specific questions around community control of police on here, which you also can, of course, make your own comments, but the basic question is, would you favor significantly stronger process around controlling police, such as holding open hearings, reopening cases involving fatal shootings, a body of disciplinary prosecutorial powers, and so forth. So that's kind of the 3 questions. Yeah, we've got a bunch of other questions here, too, but that's the ones I'd like to start with.
I noticed something in here, and I have to make a correction to it. It says here, will you agree to attend and answer questions at the homeless census briefing on September
28th? 29th.
That's not the correction. That's one correction. Okay. The other correction is, the candidates aren't going to be answering questions. They're going to be asking questions.
Uh-huh.
And that they're going to be making statements. They are not going to be answering
questions. This is more interesting. Uh-huh. Well, I'd like to see the public be able to ask the questions informally. Maybe that would be the thing to do.
That is not going to happen at that particular venue.
Well, I'm a little confused. You're talking about in the middle here, was rent control and tenant issues? Is that what you're talking about?
No, protection. She's talking about this.
Yeah,
it is rent.
And it says September 28th. That should be the 29th.
The 29th. And
then there's another one on October
28th? Yes,
that's the it's not connected. Okay. All right.
They're connected and they're both scan sponsored.
Okay.
Well, it's not for sure yet.
No, it doesn't disagree with this one here, but there is a scan.
Okay. So there's something on the 28th and something on the 29th of September. And the 28th of October.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Well, we don't know where that's going to be held, right?
No. And this is all kind of preliminary discussion. You're hearing Bonnie Moore, Dick DeBrava, Becky Johnson, Maureen Smith all talking. Homeless activists and candidates are Bonnie Moore, Dick DeBrava, and Arnie Leff, talking about upcoming forums. October 28th, the Dolphin Forum is scheduled to happen in community TV studios. That's still on the agenda. There was a forum, as some of you already may know, of the homeless census, where Paul Brindell kind of briefed the candidates, and the candidates were able to ask questions, and I think they may have made statements as well. That was on Friday night. I didn't get to see it. I understand it was a pretty pathetic performance by the candidates. Perhaps someone who saw it can call in. And we do have phone lines open at 427-3772. Because the talk show hosts for the current program that should be in this slot haven't showed up, I'm continuing the show. And if I get a call from them explaining what's happening, I'll be happy, of course, to turn it over to them. And you can call in the meantime at 427-3772. And we're listening to a homeless working group meeting. It's taking a little while to get there, but you're going to hear some candidates' statements or refusal to make statements on the sleeping ban. That should be happening soon.
That's what you were telling me about just the other night. Okay. Mm-hmm. I can take this with me, right?
Well, I have problems tonight. Okay, so I don't really have any intention of answering Mr. Norse's questions.
And that is Arnie Leff. He has problems. He has no intention of answering Mr. Norse's questions. Actually, they're the questions from the Homeless Working Group, which I've put forward, but which in fact are questions we all want to hear the answers to.
And if you'd like, I'll leave. I am absolutely willing to discuss how we deal with homelessness in Santa Cruz County. I am not willing to deal with it the way Mr. Norse would like to do.
Okay, why don't we just have a general discussion about the homeless issue first, and then, Arnie, you can stick around and see what everybody else feels or whatever.
Okay.
Certainly everybody's prerogative.
Well, I need to also be more educated in this, so that's what I came down here for.
Sure.
I don't believe I'm ready to answer a lot of questions, but I'm ready to be educated.
Sure.
So.
Is there some question you object to, Arnie, in this particular one, or is it?
No, Robert, it's just the same old rhetoric, you know, and I don't really want to do it.
Well, I'm not quite sure what, I mean, sections A and B have been sought for a long time as a litmus test both by the Green Party and by other groups. Is that
well, I'm not, I don't have a problem in answering these questions.
Oh, okay.
I have a problem because they are questions.
I don't understand.
I do not want to deal with you on answering these questions. I am willing to discuss how we can deal with homelessness in Santa Cruz County. I am not willing to discuss answering these questions with you. I'm willing to do it in the public forum of some kind, if there is an appropriate public forum, and I will be glad to, but I am not going to do it here.
Well, this is a public forum, and if other someone else asks you the question, would you be willing to answer the question?
No, I'm not. I personally do not like some of the implications of the questions, voting to replace the chief of police and the city manager. I mean, that's nonsense to me. Not that.
That's an answer. That's
not enough. Not that I might answer it in the positive, for that matter, but I don't know. You know, I'm not going to answer it one way or another because I think the question is inappropriate. I guess that's my feeling.
Well, I think we have the right to choose the questions, aren't
and
we?
I have the right to answer what
course,
I wish.
Of course.
So why don't we just start off with a general discussion? Maybe I can kind of kick it off.
Michael Schmidt is playing the peacemaker here.
The Chamber of Commerce has been historically a big supporter of the camping ban and has been a big advocate not to repeal the camping ban. After some education by their CEO to the board about the issues surrounding the camping ban, and the criminalization of the act of sleeping, the board, not unanimously, but with a majority of the board, did vote to support a recommendation that I made that we create safe sleeping zones, if nothing else, in an interim state until we can find a more tenable solution to this problem. And at that time, we recommended the county parking lot, and we recommended the armory, primarily because of the logistics and the input that we received from other communities. Subsequent to this, the county has been absolutely